You're listening to CPA Review, and more you're listening to CPA Review, and more you're listening to CPA Review, and more you're listening to CPA Review, and more.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, wherever you might be joining us from. This is a Yeager CPA Review Live. Questions and answers, recharge and pass the CPA Review with your host, Phil Yeager, and our guest co-host, Ron Primoroso. Without any further ado, I'm going to pass our microphone on over to Phil and Ron.
Well, thank you very much. The last webinar we did, we got a lot of nice response, and people were happy with it, and we're going to try again. We're going to do our best, and I'm here with my cohort, partner in crime, Ron Primoroso. All right. Ron and I have something in common. We're both from the New York area originally, right, Ron?
Correct.
And occasionally we use that New York accent, so please excuse that if it comes out. But to continue on here, what we're going to do is we're going to take each of the parts, and we're going to try to tell you what students are having trouble with, or from what we have knowledge of, what areas they seem to be emphasizing on the different parts. Now, let me say this. Just because we're discussing only certain areas, it doesn't mean that the other areas are not tested. Because, once again, if you want to know what's on the exam, you must follow the AICPA blueprints. The AICPA blueprints. We're going to start, we did a coin toss. No, we didn't. We did, we decided before what we would cover first. So we're going to spend about 10 to 15 minutes on each area so it doesn't completely bore you out of your mind. But no, I think it'll be very informative. Anyway, I'm going to let Ron start off because Ron is very knowledgeable in the BEC part. And I'm going to ask you, Ron, you talk to the students who are studying for the BEC, or maybe you've heard things about what they're emphasizing on the BEC part of the exam. Can you tell us what those might be?
Yes, Phil. So on BEC, for those of you studying for BEC, as you know, it's multiple parts are all quite different. And most of the candidates I have helped recently on BEC are concerned about their ability to do well on the information technology portion of the exam. And Phil, that's not surprising, right? Because there's so many things going on in information technology, and the AICPA is changing the blueprints also constantly to update them for changes that are happening in information technology, right? Like, for example, cloud computing and storage. And of course, the AICPA is very cognizant of all of these breaches, right, going on in corporations like Equifax and others, right? We've all read about those in the news, right? Target, et cetera. And, you know, these are important. So the role of the accounting professional in information technology and also in these breaches of privacy and security are very important. So what I want to just briefly go over, Phil, is recently in the blueprints, not only are they emphasizing information technology a little bit more in detail, but they're integrating the COSO framework, right? The Committee of Sponsoring Organizations.
And that is what, Ron, the COSO framework?
That's the Committee of Sponsoring Organizations of the Treadway Commission. That is the basic internal control framework which the SEC pushes, right? Securities and Exchange Commission pushes on publicly registered companies. And if you read the internal control reports, right, issued by auditors, they always mention the COSO framework. Does the client comply with the main components of the COSO framework with regards to information and communication, and especially, Phil, right, internal controls, right, which impact the quality of the financial statements in general.
Now, isn't internal controls really covered also in auditing?
Yes, Phil, and that's another thing. The exam, more and more, right, as they update the blueprints, they're crossing between the individual CPA exam section, right? And we also always, as you know, Phil, recommend people start with FARS and then go to auditing because FARS feeds auditing. Well, auditing also feeds BEC, okay, especially as it relates to information technology and the controls that are required in information technology to protect the integrity of financial statement information. So also the ERP framework, right, Enterprise Risk Management Framework, right, is another part of COSO and the internal control framework, which now we see in the new blueprints, Phil, that they're emphasizing the importance that every corporation, including the accounting function, and focuses on and emphasizes assessment of risk in the information technology area of a company. So what a lot of candidates
What do they ask about risk area?
Okay, Phil. So, for example, what is the involvement, starting with the board of directors, what is the involvement of the board of directors, right, in risk assessment of the company? When was the last time, for example, Phil, you had somebody come in and try and compromise your information systems, right, and try to hack into your customer database or your social security numbers for your customers, those type of things, okay? You know, these are the type of things that they're assessing, and the ASCPA also is testing on the exam. Do you understand the importance of those, and are the risks being assessed, and how do you offset those risks, Phil? What controls do you put into place? Preventative controls, detective controls, and also corrective controls. And for those of you studying auditing, that should sound familiar, okay? And I'm going to cover auditing here after Phil covers some other sections. So that, Phil, is a big area at the moment. And another concern I'm getting from students are, as you know, Phil, on BEC, there are 3 written communication simulations or problems that they present. And 2 of them are graded, and it's worth 15 to 20% of the exam. And I've spoken to a number of candidates recently and said, you know, I didn't pass the exam. And one of the reasons is I got a very bad rating on the written communication questions that were on the exam. So what I'd like to emphasize here to all of you that are going to take BEC is there's a couple of basic things that you need to think about and strategize when you're doing the written communication problems. Number one, think of it like a business memo, right? Most of you maybe are in business or are in business today or have done business. Think about writing a letter or a message, someone, right, related to business to one of your customers. And there are some really important basics, Phil, that they grade you on, like do you use complete sentences, okay, when you write that business letter? Don't use bullet points. The AICPA hates bullet points when you answer the questions like that. Use short, simple, and to-the-point answers to the questions, okay? And I want to remind all of you, the exam software has spell check on it. So when you're done writing your answer to a written communication problem, make sure you use the spell check function because that's a distractor to the grader, though some of these are graded by machine, others are graded by grader. So you definitely don't want to have the attention fill of the grader when you're spelling things wrong in a written communication problem. Stay on the topic, Phil. Don't repeat the topic, though. Don't copy the entire written communication simulation into your answer. Just put in there the key parts and answer the questions.
Are the written communications like writing memos to people?
Yes, writing memos, writing business letters, writing answers to accounting questions, writing answers to technical questions, economic questions. And think about, Phil, on the BEC topics, right? Information technology, economics, cost accounting. It could be any topics related to those areas, right? Where they're asking you to just write a memo to your boss or write a memo to your client addressing the key areas of those subject areas. So most importantly, be concise, organize your answer, right? Introduction, middle paragraph, body, and summary conclusion. And of course, Phil, manage your time, right? You can't spend 25 or 30 minutes on these, right? You have about 10, 15, 17 minutes to answer each one of these written communication
questions. Let me get this straight. There's 3 written communications, right?
Correct.
You told me earlier they only grade 2 of them.
They only grade 2. And you don't know, Phil, which ones are going to grade. So you have to take each one of them, of course, right, very seriously and answer all 3 and don't take a risk and only answer 2 out of the 3, okay? So,
and you're recommending that they spend no more than 17 minutes on all 3 of the written communications?
No. I would say between 12 and 15 minutes on each question. That's about the maximum amount of time you have.
So that would be 45 minutes?
Yes, is what you have on those.
Will that be too much time to take them from – do you have a – do you have a breakdown of what you recommend for the
So
I'm sorry, when you get to the exam, what is your breakdown? I mean, you have 4 hours, right?
Yes, four hours. 62 multiple choice, right, Phil, on the exam.
How much time do they spend on each multi?
Well, I mean, 2 hours, of course, should be the maximum, but it would be nice if you get that done in about 90 minutes, Phil.
So that will leave 100, if they do 90 minutes on those,
then you have 150 minutes, right? So then you have four task-based simulations.
Okay.
And those you should spend roughly, what, 20 minutes, 20 to 25 minutes?
Okay, so that will give you about 80 minutes.
Yep. And then there are the three
70 minutes. Go ahead.
And then the three written communication questions.
So that's 45. So that gives you 25 minutes over. Maybe my math is wrong. What should they do with that 25 minutes?
Well, I mean, you can go back, obviously, and depending on how, what a lot of my candidates do, Phil, is they look at those task-based simulations and the written communications up front, right? Attack the ones first that they feel most comfortable with, right? The gain time, and then use the excess time, Phil, to address those task-based simulations and written communications where they're not quite so sure, right? Or not quite so comfortable with the concept so they can spend more time doing the best job they can in answering those questions.
And for those candidates taking courses, I want to inform you of this. The AICPA does not actually release to us written communications that they've given in the past. So any written communications that you're seeing in your courses are all author-constructed. Now, the thing is, if you want to practice doing written communications, all right, and check your grammar. We can't check your content. That's one thing, all right? But grammar, sentence structure, we recommend you invest in a program called Grammarly. That's G-R-A-M-M-E-R-L-Y. Did I get that right?
Yes, that's
Grammarly.
Correct.
Now, there's a free Grammarly program, but that doesn't check sentence structure, okay?
Yep.
If you want to check that, it's about $60. $60 a year. You're not going to use it more than a year, obviously. You don't want to be a professional CPA candidate. So you won't use it for a whole year. But it's a good investment, especially when English is a second language, or even if it isn't, you want to make sure that you're going to pass that written communication. I would recommend Grammarly. I really would. And, Ron, I wanted to ask you one question. What about cost managerial? You have any comments on that?
Yes, Phil. That's another subject where candidates are saying to me, you know, I haven't had that in so many years, or I only took one course, and I don't remember any of it. And I think the real challenge there, Phil, is to understand, because they do test it on the exam, process costing, okay? And that's the weighted average method, and that's the FIFO method, okay, on process costing. And my best advice to you on that is, you know, you need to work some problems, and you need to take a lot of multiple choice questions related to that and check your knowledge on that and get comfortable with it, because, you know, God forbid, Phil, you get a simulation question, right, or a task-based simulation, which is also possible on cost accounting. You definitely want to be conversant on process costing, which is a major costing technique, right, under cost accounting. So both weighted average and the FIFO method are important to understand.
And what about finance? Is that something they should worry about?
Well, Phil, again, each one of these five sections of BEC are all worth about the same. Okay?
I would probably say finance could be a key area now.
Yes.
The stock market is dropping.
Yes, like it did today. Yes.
What type of hedges should you invest in to hedge against the market going down? I mean, I think that could be an area.
Yes.
And, and how do you learn that? Well, first of all, follow the blueprints. They'll tell you what they want you to know, and make sure the course you're studying has that stuff in their books and whatever videos they have. And I can say this, and once again, I am biased. The Yeager CPA Review course does have everything. We integrate the blueprints, and we have all of that information that Ron has mentioned. And by the way, they do test economics. Now, they don't expect you to be an expert in economics, but they expect you to know certain things like supply curve, demand curve, all that stuff, and how shifts in that affect, right?
Yes.
How good your
soul. Interest rate, inflation, all of these subjects, Phil, are tested to a very pretty simplistic but important that you understand level.
And it's not, let's just say this. The exam is very passable, the BEC, and you shouldn't have any problem. The questions that are released to us are really the questions from the old content specification days. Now, there was no content specification for BEC because BEC was not on the exam at that time. So what a lot of the providers are doing is they're taking questions from the CMA exam, all right, and they're actually putting them in their books. So that's where you can get questions on economics, finance. But overall, all right, you should read the blueprints. That will tell you what you need to know. And once again, that's what they're going to test on. They're going to test on the blueprints. I can't say that enough. That's the secret to the sauce, all right?
Yep. And, Phil, they're updating them almost every quarter now.
They do,
Phil,
change them. They really do. They do change them, all right? Now, anything else you want to say about BEC, Ron?
That's it on BEC, Phil. Over to you for the next part.
All right. I'm going to talk about regulation, the regulation part of the exam. I have a book that I recommend. It's called The Trump's Tax Act. It's by Eva Rosenberg, all right, who's an enrolled agent I know very well. And you can buy this on Amazon. And Eva really does a good job taking it. And look how thin this is versus your typical fast book. But if you want the changes and you want a summary of them, they're in this book. Now, what are some of the changes? Well, let's talk about, first of all, on business returns. The question is, do you have to know Section 179 expense deduction? Well, the Section 179 expense deduction is $1 million. You can write off up to $1 million of tangible personal property used in a trade or business. It does not apply to real estate. Now, remember, if the total purchases of that tangible personal property exceed $2 million, then you're going to lose one. For every dollar you go over the $2 million, you lose $1 of the $1 million. And please remember this. The chances are they could say this to you, all right? They don't expect you to know the limits on that, and I'll tell you why. Generally, the Section 179 can change every year. And the exam is made up in advance. So what they might say to you is, Joe Smith, taxpayer, took $200,000 of Section 179. So you say, wait a minute, I thought you can take up to $1 million. No, you can take up to $1 million, not $1 million, up to $1 million. So what they'll do is they'll tell you he took some Section 179, all right, and they'll give you the amount. Now, that's because they want to see if you know what to do with the Section 179 on the tax return. Now, remember, there's several things here. You have Section 179. You have your bonus depreciation, and also you have your regular maker's depreciation. Now, what order do you deduct those in? Well, first of all, you take the original cost minus the Section 179. Subtract it, you get a remaining basis. Then you can deduct bonus depreciation on tangible personal property, and the present bonus depreciation is 100%. So let's assume the cost is $150,000. You take Section 179 of $50,000. That will leave $100,000. You can take 100% of that $100,000, and basically you brought your basis down to zero. So your total depreciation is the 179 and the bonus. All right? Now, also, please keep this in mind. There are depreciation rules. The depreciation rules have not changed. For example, personal property used in a trade or business is generally 5 or 7 year property. 5 years is generally computers, machinery, and equipment. 7 years is furniture and fixtures. And the maximum depreciation method you take for all businesses except farming, all right, is 200% declining balance. Real estate, if it's residential rental property, it's 27 and a half years straight line. And if it's not residential property, it's 39 years straight in line. And once again, the averaging convention method for real estate, the amount of depreciation you take the first year, all right, will be the mid-month method. All right, be aware of that. Now, When it comes to personal property using a trader business, all right, we have two averaging convention methods. We have the mid-quarter method and the half year. Now, when do you use the mid-quarter method for tangible personal property? All right, you use it if 40% of all your property was placed in service in the fourth quarter of the year. Now, if you don't have 40% or more placed in service in the fourth quarter of the year, and this is tangible personal property using a trader business, then you use the half-year convention, which means you use the what? Half-year of the depreciation. Half-year of a full depreciation. Now, the averaging convention methods are only used in the first year, all right? In the second year, thereafter, you take full-year depreciation until you get to the last year, and you take the remaining depreciation that you did not take because you had maybe a half-year. So if you took the half-year convention in the final year, all right, you take the other half year, all right? So be familiar with that. Now, as far as other things that people seem to have trouble with, and I want to mention this, and there's been a change in the tax law, and this deals with like-kind transactions. Like-kind transactions now only apply to real estate used in a trader business. You no longer have a like-kind transaction for personal property, all right? It doesn't apply anymore. That's a change in the Trump Act. Now, the thing you have to remember is this. If you're calculating a like-kind transaction, make sure it's real estate using a trader business, and that includes rental property. And what you're going to do is you're going to calculate the realized gain first. So you're going to take the fair market value of the new asset you receive. All right. Also, you could receive BOOT, which means you could receive cash or any unlike property. So if you're exchanging, for example, an automobile, all right, using a trader business, and they give you a sailboat, all right, as an item that you receive, the sailboat is considered boot because it's unlike property. The like property was the exchange of the cars, all right. Add up the total you receive and subtract your old basis, and if the amount you receive exceeds your old basis, you have realized gain. And please remember, your gain recognized is the lesser of the boot received or the realized gain. Now, make sure you know how to handle it if for any reason there are mortgages taken out on that real estate. All right? Like-kind exchange only apply to real estate. Did I mention that? I'm sorry if I didn't. All right? I don't want to confuse the issue. It only applies to real estate transactions. It no longer applies to personal property. Okay? Remember, like-kind exchange now only applies to real estate, not personal property using a trader business. So let's go back to that. All right. Let's assume that you exchange real estate. I think I mentioned that, rental properties. Okay. And all right, let's assume that someone assumes your mortgage on the property you give up and you take on a new mortgage. Now, what you do is this. You have to net the mortgages. If the mortgage that was actually, all right, taken on by another party is boot received. If you take on a new mortgage, that's boot paid. Now, net the mortgages. If you net the mortgages and that boot received is actually part of the gain recognized. But if you net the mortgages and that boot paid, you don't subtract those from the gain. Boot paid from the netting mortgages does not affect the recognized gain. All right. Make sure you understand that. Okay. I know I'm trying to go over a lot of things in a very short period of time, okay? But also, make sure you know how to do wash sales. This is another thing that gives people problems, all right? Know what a wash sale is. And also, on the individual tax returns, we had major changes. For example, all right, there's no longer deductions for personal exemptions. No longer deductions for the taxpayer, spouse, and dependents. No deductions anymore. That really hurt. Also, all right, they eliminated a lot of the miscellaneous itemized deductions. The 2% miscellaneous itemized deductions, all right, that they had, tax preparation, all right, unreimbursed employee business expenses, costs to seek education expenses. All of the miscellaneous 2% itemized deductions are no longer allowed. Also, all right, when it comes to state and local income taxes, that includes personal property taxes. the maximum state, local, and real estate taxes, which is included, all of those, all right, you can only deduct up to $10,000, all right? So you have your sales tax, state income tax withheld, real estate taxes, and personal property taxes. You can only deduct the maximum of $10,000. So what's happening here is for people who live in very high areas, like for example, if you live in New Jersey, your real estate taxes are sky high, and they're going to be more than $10,000. You can only take $10,000. So therefore, by taking a maximum of only $10,000 on your real estate taxes, you can't add to that any state income taxes withheld, any sales taxes, or any personal property. All right? Just remember that. And also, all right, they lowered the, by the way, home equity loan interest is no longer deductible in most cases. All right? Yeah. Yeah. All right. And remember, points, the rules are still the same. If points are deductible, if they are actually costs of additional interest you're paying to get the loan. But if you pay points for processing, they're not deductible. All right. Now, gambling losses, they're still deductible up to gambling winnings. All right. Gee, we don't want to give that away. All right. And then the medical expenses. All of the unreimbursed medical expenses, including dental, doctors, et cetera, all right, including transportation, for 2019, that's the tax returns you're doing, all right, they must exceed 7.5% of AGI. Mm. And a new item is the qualified business income deduction, the QBI. And what that is for those entities that are flow-through entities, like S corporations, partnerships, LLCs that are S-corps, so make an S-corporation, and also sole proprietors, all right, the ordinary income of those entities, all right? For example, if you're an S-corp, line one is your share of the ordinary income. If you're a partnership, line one is your share of the ordinary income. If you're a sole proprietor, your net profit from self-employment is your ordinary income, all right? And you can get a deduction of 20% of that income, all right, that flows through to you as a qualified business income deduction, all right? Now, I don't know how hard they've been asking that. It's a very complicated deduction. It's more than I just said, but I think if they asked it, they're not going to get that involved. All right, now, there are other changes. I just have to mention this to you. Don't get all wrapped up on business law. That's in the regulation, all right? There's only maybe about 15, 16 multiple choice on business law. All right. Now, are they important to know? Yeah. But if you want to know what areas they're testing on, they tell you specifically in the blueprint what areas of business law.
Yeah.
You don't look at the blueprint. You may be studying areas of business law that are not on the exam. And don't forget professional responsibilities. All right. That's also important. Now, professional responsibilities has been, and I can't guarantee it's going to continue, but it's been multiple choice questions. All right. But I'll tell you this, if you don't do well on those, all right, they're going to fail you because, gee, their feeling is this. If you don't know ethics of your profession, all right, especially dealing with tax preparation, tax preparer penalties, that type of thing, all right, if you fail that part, they're not going to pass you, all right? They don't want people out there who are failures in legal responsibilities to pass the exam, okay? And one last thing. All right. The areas that also create a lot of problems for people and why they fail are entities. All right. They have trouble with corporation taxation, partnership taxation, and also, all right, make sure you know estates and trusts. Just the stuff they ask you. They ask for Form 1041 for estates and trusts. All right. That's where you report the income from an estate or a trust. Form 1041. So they're going to ask you the income and the deductions on the Form 1041. All right. Now, that's some of the areas in a nutshell. Okay. And if you want to know specifically what you must study, what's the answer on that?
The blueprint. Always the blueprint.
Study the blueprints. Right.
Yeah. Hey, Phil, a number of the listeners want to see that book that you started your presentation.
Okay, here's the book. And by the way, I don't get royalties on this.
Okay, yeah. It's important to mention. Right? There it is.
It's called the Trump Tax Cut. It's by Eva Rosenberg. That's R-O-S-E-N-B-E-R-G, Rosenberg.
Great.
She's called that. She's known as Tax Mama.
Yep.
Right? And this is available on Amazon. That's where I got my copy.
You can also find it at taxmama.com.
And by the way, all right, it's only how much? How much is it on?
If you have Audible, it can be free. If you have an Audible subscription through Amazon, it's $11.99 on Kindle, $13.37 for a physical paper book, or you can get an audio CD for $25.86 through Amazon Prime as well.
Yeah, I mean, the audio book is good. The audio is good if you have a long commute and you want to hear it. All right. I use the book. So, you know, I think the book, I mean, you get both for the price that it is. It's not that much. It's really a good resource. I've used it tremendously. And I think it'll make a difference in your grade. Okay? Is there any other questions before we go to the next part?
We actually have a couple of people so on the poll right now, we're asking about the Jaeger CPA Review Gold subscription and the instructor hotline. We've got a few people who have responded. They want to know more. So I'm going to go ahead and share the Jaeger website on my screen here. And you guys can also check out all of that information at JaegerCPAReview.com. We've got it all right there available for you. The instructor hotline is access to one-on-one instructor support. And that is provided at a 3-month subscription for $149 a month. That is available only on the subscription for the gold level currently. We are looking at possibly opening that up as an a la carte or standalone service, and we will be talking.
Does that include access to me, Rob?
Yes. So you'll still get access to Phil Jaeger, and even if you're not a CPA review student with Jaeger, you can still call and talk to Phil. However, if you have questions that are outside of the general course inquiries, if you are not a Jaeger student, that does not give you access to the other instructors. So if there's a question that Phil might not be able to answer, you would need to subscribe to the gold level service for the Jaeger CPA review course. You can also get it as an add-on to the full course bundle for all four parts, but it is not currently available for a single course section or as a current standalone for the silver or bronze level. So if you are looking at Jaeger and you are a student that might need a little bit more help going into the more detailed sections of the CPA review course, you can definitely sign up for the Jaeger CPA review course through the gold level, get direct access to all of our instructors and be able to talk to them one-on-one over the phone, or we can even set up video conference chat for you so you can actually see each other and see screens of like the Jaeger course.
To basically clarify that. Now, we also introduced this year the subscription plan, all right, which means people don't want to own the course, all right? They just want to use it. Maybe for 1 month, 2 months, 3 months. All right. Now, the best thing to do is go to the website, go to the homepage. I think it's on the homepage, and it'll tell you all the features of the subscription plan. And I generally say to people, all right, one, if you have one part, you're studying one part, or you got, you know, you're one part and you don't need to study for 2-3 months, only 1 month, it will be more beneficial to listen to. You have all the same features. All right, basically of the regular course, get the subscription, okay? But once again, look at our website. It'll give you features of each one. And if you have any question, you can call our office and talk to Sonny. Sonny's pretty, you know, he's very, very informative. And his number is 301-874-4900, all right? And there's an 800 number here on the top. You can see that, but our number is 301-874-4900, extension 6, Sonny. All right. You can reach him generally 7 days a week. You can reach me 7 days a week. And, all right, if you want to call me, all right, I have the same number, 301-874-4900, but I'm extension 5. It tells you when you call. All right. So all we're saying is, all right, we're trying to make this as simple as possible. But if you still have questions, it's not like we're disappearing off the face of the earth. We're here. Okay. And we will give you the best advice we can, all right, what you should do. I never looked at this course as more than I give the students the best advice I can, all right? I don't believe in overcharging or selling things in any way that is not useful to the student. And you'll find when it comes to service, and I didn't want to make this a commercial, but, you know, we give service, okay? No other course, you can talk to the owner, all right? And even a live person like Ron, who actually is very, I would call him an expert in the area, all right? By the other course, you call someone, you're talking to someone who's on the phone who can't even answer the questions. So we want to help you. And once again, make sure we integrate the blueprints. All right, let's go on to the next thing. Let's talk about auditing, all right? Ron, what are the most recent changes in auditing? By the way, let me mention something. There was a meeting yesterday of the AICPA examination division. And where we're going to be going, by the way, I hate to say this, but there's less people taking the exam than ever before. And the reason for that is that, all right, they're going for other certifications, like a CMA. Mm-hmm. But the CMA is not a license, all right? The CPA is a license.
Yep.
But the thing is, all right, a lot of people are saying there's a rumor going around the CPA is going to be, you know, a dinosaur in a few years, all right? And I don't think that's the case. It's going, I mean, we're going to have to know how to interpret data, all right? Getting away from doing basic accounting, bookkeeping, that's going to be out, all right? We're going to have to analyze data. Yes. And the thing is, the students now are not actually learning that at school. And also, the exam is not testing that now. So the exam is going to change, all right? It's going to change where basically the whole idea of the exam is going to see if you can interpret data instead. And basically, they're doing that in some way now, all right? There's no more memorizing, all right? The purpose of the simulation is to see if you can interpret things, you know, and come up with answers. And right now, the task-based simulations are the best way they can do it, all right? And also, they expect you over the next, after about 2020, July of 2020, you're going to have to know how to work with Excel more, all right, than they're actually asking now, all right? That will occur. So we are not just a bunch of, bookkeepers anymore, all right? We got bots to do bookkeeping, all right? We still have to interpret the data. And the CPA is the most recognized credential, both, you know, in the United States and also in the foreign countries. And somehow there's going to have to be a change to the way we determine what the CPA is. Right now, the CPA is a license, all right? And the AICPA's position has been that it's a due public accounting. Although the big four, most of their revenue is coming from consulting, all right, with all of the areas I spoke about, bots, artificial intelligence. So they're really looking at the exam now to determine we have to shift what the CPA really is, all right? Is it going to be where the people are going to take the CPA exam, get the designation, and then at some point, there'll be other tests that they want to go into, consulting in some matter, financial planning, all the areas. It's going to change. But there is a shortage of accountants right now. You get that CPA, it'll make a big difference. You'll have flexibility, all right? You'll be able to get better positions and make more money. I don't mean to be materialistic, but let's call it, that's the way it is. We don't work for the good of mankind, all right? We work. You know, we want to provide good things for ourselves, for our family, all right? And the CPA will give you that. And if you hate your job, all right, you have more flexibility to go to another job because a lot of them say they want CPAs. All right, I'm sorry for getting into that. All right, now, auditing. What's the big things in auditing, Ron?
So Phil, parlaying on exactly what you described there, the blueprints have been revised starting this quarter, Phil, to have more and more emphasis of audit data analytics, Phil. Perfectly, you just described it, okay? And how does the auditor or how should the auditor use audit data analytics in assessing the risk when they're performing an audit, okay? So what we see now more and more in the audit is the auditors, of course, obtaining data, right, from the information technology group, of their clients, okay? They're obtaining data files, for example, invoices, right? Revenues recorded, expenses, accounts payable, accounts receivable, all the things we're familiar with as accountants. And they're using that data, Phil, to generate data analytics. In other words, are there trends in that information, in that data? For example, revenues, right? For example, maybe there's a client where they record the majority of their revenue suddenly the last day of a month or the last day of a quarter, right? That should be a signal to the auditor that perhaps there is some risk, right, associated with the recording of those revenues that they should look into when they're performing their compliance and substantive auditing procedures. And that's one example. The same thing, Phil, we could say getting data analytics and analyzing it. This can be graphs, line graphs, bar graphs, all types of different graphs, but for gross margin on sales, right? For example, there may be particular customers where, you know, boy, it seems strange. We only had a 50% margin on these customers in the past, and suddenly there's an 80% margin, right? Is there something maybe wrong with the cost of those sales, right?
It's interpreting data.
Yes, interpreting data, right? Or did we raise the prices to that customer so that the margin goes up, right? These are common sense questions, Phil, that come with data analytics, okay? And really the audit now is more and more being centered on data analytics of data, okay?
Are there blueprints mentioning what you have to know in data analytics now? Although, because there's this meeting yesterday, they said they're going to come up with new blueprints on data analytics.
Yeah, I think right now, Phil, not very specific, other than to the extent of using it to assess risk. And remember, I talked about risk, right, Phil, when we talked about BEC? Well, here comes risk again, right, in auditing and using audit data analytics to assess risk. You're going to use data for that, okay? And what we're going to see, Phil, and you said it, in 2020, right, that's a real thing.
First or the second quarter, they're going to mention that.
So yes.
Right now, don't worry about it as much, all right?
Yes.
New blueprints I'm talking about are not for the exam right now, okay?
No, but they could give you a graph, Phil, that says, you know, your audit analytics shows you this for expenses. Are there some questions you should be asking during the performance of your audit based on that simple little graph, okay? And I think the sophisticated items will come next year, Phil. So definitely audit data analytics is one area. Another one where I'm getting a lot of questions right now, Phil, and this was a revision to the blueprint made early this year, in January of this year, is what's called professional skepticism. Now, as you know, when you perform an audit, right, it's very important to be skeptical. And the blueprints now have gotten much more specific about that, Phil. In other words, you know, I think it's very important when you perform an audit, you don't take at face value everything that you're told by your audit client. Okay, and it's important to dig into the details, right, and get corroborating evidence supporting management's assertions, okay? So, for example, let's assume that a client has a significant lawsuit against them, okay? And the client tells you in a meeting, the management tells you, don't worry about it. There's no chance that we're going to have any type of liability from this particular lawsuit. Well, you know, under generally accepted auditing standards, you should get a letter from the lawyer, right, corroborating the point of the client saying, well, you know, under the current circumstances and based on the legal work done to date on this case, that it's not probable and estimatable how much that we're going to lose on this particular situation. So the blueprints now, Phil, have expanded this a lot more into getting information not only from management, Phil, during an audit, but also from non-management people, okay, walking around the company, talking to the warehouse people, talking to the accounts receivable people, right, and corroborating the information you're getting from top management about things like bad debt reserves, allowance for doubtful accounts, allowance for slow-moving inventory. You know, not taking everything just from management, really getting more corroborating information. And that suspicious mind, right, Phil, we talk about in auditing, which is so important. And the other thing, Phil, and this goes back to our years when we took the exam, the importance of the concept of independence, Phil, right? Independence in your mind and independence also, too, in your appearance. We're seeing that brought back more and more. And where this is coming from, Phil, is when the Public Company Accounting Oversight Board does their inspections of the auditing firms, that are performing audits of public companies, they're not finding enough of this professional skepticism, in their view, being done by the auditors of the big firms and the small and the medium firms, too, of public company audits. You know, they don't find enough of this basic professional skepticism. So Phil, this could be task-based simulation type questions, okay, as well as mobile choice questions. And I want to remind everyone, Phil, auditing, right, is 72 mobile choice questions and eight task-based simulations. And you could see questions now, Phil, on the exam related to professional skepticism as well as audit data analytics in the future.
Thank you very much, Ron. All right, let's do some financial accounting, all right, talking to students. And by the way, if someone takes the exam, I do not ask them what was on the exam, okay? I'm not allowed to do that. And ethically, they're not supposed to tell me. But anyway, here's the areas that people are having trouble with. It's consolidations. And remember, if you own more than 50% of a subsidiary, all right? Well, let me reclassify. If a company owns more than 50% of the stock of another company, and they have that control permanently, not for a temporary period, then they must consolidate. Now, what do you have to know? You have to know how to bring the two companies together on a worksheet and make certain intercompany eliminations. And what are the intercompany eliminations? Well, all right, first of all, you have to eliminate any intercompany receivables and payables because you can't owe yourself money. You can't be owed money, all right? Remember, the parent and the sub are one company, and when they consolidate, they're only the parent. Also, remember, if the parent sells inventory to the sub or the sub sells it to the parent at a profit, you have to make an adjustment elimination on a worksheet to eliminate that profit. All right. Also, you have to eliminate intercompany sales and purchases because the parent can sell to the sub can sell to the parent. All right. So if it's an intercompany sale and purchase, you generally debit sales to eliminate the intercompany sale and credit cost of goods sold. And then, all right, if the parent sells to the sub a fixed asset or the sub sells to the parent a fixed asset, remember, the gain on the sale or the loss on the sale between the two parties must be eliminated. You can't make a gain or loss on your own self. And remember, you have to restore the asset back to the original cost as though the sale did not occur. You have to restore back the accumulated depreciation because when the sale occurs, you take off the accumulated depreciation from the company's books. Now on the worksheet, you're restoring it. You're putting back the accumulated depreciation. And you're eliminating the intercompany gain and loss. And also, you have intercompany bonds. Don't forget that. If the parent acquires the sub's bonds or the sub acquires the parent's bonds, all right, the company who bought the bonds will have an investment in bonds. The company who issued the bonds will have a bonds payable. And they sold it at a discount, all right, there'll be an unamortized bond discount. Now, you have to eliminate that intercompany investment by crediting investment in bonds and debiting the bonds payable. And if it was sold at a discount, unamortized discount is a debit balance, so you have to credit that unamortized discount to eliminate it. Okay? And also, there could be a gain or loss on that extinguishment of debt. If you eliminate intercompany bonds, it's considered an extinguishment of debt. All right? You could have a gain or loss, but please remember, on the consolidated income statement, that gain or loss is no longer extraordinary. There's no longer extraordinary gains and losses. It's all ordinary. And the other thing is, I think I covered that. Also, make sure you know how to calculate. All right. When a parent acquires a sub and they don't acquire 100% and they acquire less than 100%, all right, there is what we call a new term for minority interest, and that's called the what? Non-controlling interest.
NCI. They call it NCI, Phil.
Right. And make sure you know how to compute the non-controlling interest and how to show it in the elimination entry when you eliminate the stockholders' equity of the sub against the parent's investment account, all right? You set up the non-controlling interest. Know how to calculate non-controlling interest. Know how to calculate goodwill, all right? Because goodwill generally occurs when you have an acquisition in consolidation. And by the way, remember, the method we now acquire an interest is called an acquisition. It's an acquisition. We're not acquiring assets of the sub. We're not acquiring their liabilities. We're acquiring really an interest in their stock. You have to remember that. All right. Just because on the worksheet, when we consolidate and everything's done on a worksheet, we put the assets of the sub at fair market value and combine them with the parent's assets at their book value. All right. That is only done on the worksheet. All right. And really, in essence, all the parent is doing is buying an interest in the sub's stock, which means that the sub will continue to operate. The sub will continue to have their assets and liabilities, and the parent will have their assets and liabilities. If the parent does acquire the sub's assets and liabilities, that's called an asset acquisition. All right. You don't do a worksheet for an asset acquisition. When they ask you for a business combination problem on the exam, all right, they're generally asking for an acquisition where the parent is acquiring interest in the sub's stock. And the other thing to remember is this. You're going to see governmental and not-for-profit questions on the exam. And they have been all multiple choice up to date. And there have been 20 of them, about 20 multiple choice. There's always 20 multiple choice on governmental and not-for-profit. All right. And usually about 16 of them are the governmental. 3 is the not-for-profit. And please make sure you know how to calculate basic earnings per share and diluted earnings per share. All right. And with that basic earnings per share, you have to know how to calculate your weighted average number of shares. Now, if you have any questions, all right, I will show you an easy way of knowing how to calculate the weighted average, but you got to know how to do that. And then the problem people have is they've been asking questions to convert numbers from cash to accrual. They give you a trial balance of the company, all right, that's on a cash basis. But you'll notice on that trial balance, there may be depreciation expense. There may be accounts payable. Why? It's because people who's preparing it are stupid. They're combining it. There's no combination of cash and accrual. It's got to be accrual basis. So what you're going to have to do is make certain adjusting entries to convert it from cash to accrual. For example, all right, you're going to have to record depreciation expense. That's accrual accounting. You have to record bad debt expense. Also, if they pay insurance in advance, all right, remember, you don't debit insurance expense under the accrual basis. You debit prepaid insurance. And then as it expires, you credit the prepaid and debit insurance expense. So there won't be any prepaid insurance account. So you're going to have to adjust it to see how much the insurance expense was overexpensed by and put the overexpense back into prepaid. And then, all right, we have unearned revenue. We only have that in accrual accounting. But what will happen on a cash basis is if they receive income in advance, they'll debit cash and credit revenue. All right, now, you're going to have to do this when you convert from cash to accrual. You're going to have to figure out how much of that revenue recorded is still unearned as of the year-end financial statements, okay? And the amortization of discount or premium. When you sell bonds at a discount or premium, the unamortized discount or premium has to be amortized. That's accrual accounting. I'm trying to think of the other things. But basically, that's it, all right? Now, the thing to remember is, all right, it's not a difficult process, and it's all a machine-graded exam, all right? So how do you prepare for those task-based simulations, whether it's each part, all right, which namely FAR, reg, okay, and auditing, all right? Now, please do not use, and this is my advice, my opinion, please do not use the ones that the course gives to you, all right, because the AICPA does not release task-based simulations to the providers. You know, if they do, maybe one or two, but not that many. So everyone you see in your courses, if they're giving you hundreds, all right, they are all author-constructed. And I always say to people who took that course, did you see any of those on the exam? And they said, no. Gee, I don't know why we didn't. Well, it wasn't there because the AICPA did not prepare them, all right? The course did. So what's the best way to actually study? Well, you should know the different types of simulations. And the different types of simulations are shown for each part on the AICPA website. Now, how do you go to this? And please, practice these, right? These are the ones you practice, not the ones that are given with your course, which will never appear on the exam. All right. So what do? You go to AICPA.org. Here's the website. All right. And then you'll put in the search box. All right. See the search box? You'll put in, all right. No, well, blueprint. No, don't put in blueprints. Okay. Put in simulations. All right. Here's your sample tests for each part. All right. You can work it out. These are the ones that are released by the AICPA. There's one for each part. All right. Please try it. That's the best way to study.
Hey, Phil, we have a very good question from a participant. Is Jaeger?
I won't study anymore. I won't give any more questions. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Yes.
Is the Jaeger CVA review course tailored to beginners or people that want to change professions, or will you need to have some type of accounting understanding to be successful using the Jaeger CPA review material?
Well, first of all, everyone who's going to take the exam has to be an accounting major or taking accounting courses. All right. So yes, I always tell people this. When we teach the concepts. We explain the concepts. All right. So if they've gone to college and they have an accounting degree, they've taken the accounting courses, which generally are required to sit for the exam, we teach all the concepts. Now, there's a lot of people that come to us who never had governmental, never had not-for-profit. We teach it to them. So who's it geared towards? It's geared towards both groups of people, because I don't care if you've had accounting, all right, or not certain subjects like governmental. Not everyone has that in college, all right? We will teach that to you, all right? We'll teach it to you. So we're not geared to any specific, you know, saying, hey, if you don't know what you're doing with anything, all right, hey, just come to us. We'll teach you. No, I mean, we're assuming you know debits, credits, accounts, current assets, current liabilities, and you get that from your accounting, all right? So to answer that question, all right, we can deal with any type of student, even if they've been out of school for several years, all right? Our course explains the concepts, and in a few weeks, I will have the director of examinations on, Mr. Michael Decker, who's going to tell you from his words what you need to pass this exam, all right? And he's going to tell you that the AICPA's position now is they want you to understand what you're doing and not memorize the concepts. So doing thousands of multiple choice questions is just memorizing questions, all right? You have to understand how to do these things. And that's what the information is. We teach from the blueprints, all right, and we integrate the blueprints in our notes so that we explain everything. It's a teaching course, all right? I think if you go to our website, there should be demos, and you can watch us, all right? And just remember, when you watch the demos, all right, you don't necessarily have the book in front of you, all right? We give you a book which follows the blueprints. We teach the material, all right? You're going to find a lot of these other courses are just PowerPoint presentations. But anyway, we use a board. You can see that. Now, Dawn is right now lecturing, all right? She's not writing on the board, but we write on the board. We actually use the old-fashioned board, all right? A lot of people describe us as with the old-fashioned.
Of a breach.
Right? And there's one guy who's old-fashioned, me, all right? But notice, when we lecture, you have the book on the right, which is in sync with the lecture, all right? So you can also see the book on the screen, okay? And, all right, I don't know if I'm going to get up in this, but I explain this stuff. Notice, I'm not reading to you. I'm explaining it to you, all right? And that's the way I teach. I hope that answered the question.
Yes.
Any other questions? Rob?
No, I think that was one
that
of
the... Was it. We had another question. If there was a live course option available, like in-person class, which we didn't
have. Let me just mention that, first of all. When I took the exam, it was given all four parts the same day as everyone else took it. 2 days in May, 2 days in November, all right? Everyone took the same exam. We took it all right, on the same day. Now, because of that, we were able to do a live course because we were preparing everyone. We knew that everyone had to take all four parts. We knew the material we had to teach them, all right? No problem. We did a live course. But then when the exam went to the computer-based exam, we could take one part at a time, all right? We don't know what part everyone in the country is taking. I mean, is everyone taking regulation? Well, if it was, no problem. We just teach regulation that month. But if we had to teach all four parts, All right. We couldn't do that the same way live. All right. Because we don't know what part someone's taking each month. So what we did is we took our live course and we filmed it.
Hello, everyone.
And I think it's pretty good. We have our own studios, by the way. All right. And very good. I think you can see the quality. All right. We don't put out any type of garbage, as I call it. All right. But we are teaching to you. And I'll tell you the advantage also of having the video, which people like now. All right. When we used to do it live, we did in the Washington, D.C. area. That's what we were known for. And the traffic was terrible. And people would get to class late and they were tired. Now no one has to commute. You can watch it at home. You can watch it anyplace. But where we pick up for the fact that it's not live is if you have questions, you pick up the phone. No emails. I don't like emails. Pick up the phone. You call me and I will talk to you. All right. Hey, don't be fooled. There's only one course that claims they still have live. It's not live in this way. There's a person there who reads to you a PowerPoint presentation. That's it. Okay. That person's not an expert. They only know that little PowerPoint. All right. Don't be fooled by that. All right. They call that live. Another course claims they have live on the computer. You can watch it live. Hey, don't be fooled by this. All right. There's so many gimmicks in this business. It sickens me. It really does. All right. Hey, look into the courses. Make sure you see what they're giving you. All right. And also, this is the most important thing. Do you integrate the blueprints in your textbook, in your notes? Now, if they say they give you the blueprints, that's not integrating, all right? It's either one of two ways. They either don't integrate it or they do integrate it, okay? All right, if they give you the blueprints just give you what the tasks are, but doesn't explain the information under each of that. That's what we had to do, all right? And by the way, if you want to copy the blueprints, they're also on AICPA.org, okay? So everyone can look at those.
So all another right. question that we just got in, are there support groups? I would love to meet up with other folks locally to study together. I need accountability to be honest. I know I can kind of answer this one a little bit.
Yeah, go ahead.
There are online support groups, but I don't know that there's any physical groups. You might be able to find something on like MeetMe and post that you're looking to meet people in this area, but currently, most platforms have, and Jaeger's one of them, we do have an online Facebook group for all of our Jaeger students where they can kind of communicate back and forth and give each other support and help there as well.
Yeah, we have, you know, the exam is now given all over the country, you know, and we have our course all over the country, outside of the country. So, you know, it's very hard to find live people. But let me tell you one thing. If you do find a couple of people who are taking the part and you want to study with them in a group live, okay, make sure that each will contribute something to the support group, all right? If you're going to have a group of three people and you're the only one that understands what's going on and the other two people can't contribute anything, that's a waste of time. I studied with someone else when I was studying for the exam, and he knew certain areas better than I do, so it was really a give and take. It was very – and also – we got together. We studied. No one likes to study by themselves. And that was what it was good for. But honestly, you can use this. People like our support group. I'm not exactly – I didn't put it together. But there seems to be a good feedback, what I hear from it. All right? So anyway.
What is the passing rate, Phil? I just got a question.
What's the passing rate?
Yes, in general.
On ours?
Of the exam, I guess, is the question from the...
Well, if you look at the ICPA statistics, what were they? You have the run?
Well, last group, quarter two, Phil, I told you earlier, FARS was about 46%, and BEC was just under 60%, but we're not sure, as you said, how those statistics are calculated.
So according to the AICPA website, they're saying Q1 this year, 48.5% passed AUD, 58% passed BEC, 44.43 passed FAR, and 50.53 passed REG.
I was told that they may not be the most accurate thing, just like the diagnostic reports that come back where you see, hey, I did comparable or stronger on all the parts but one, and I failed, I was told those aren't necessarily real good indicators. And they actually have disclaimers, okay? They're not going to, you know, say, oh, this is it, we guarantee it. No. Okay? I wish I could say these are the passing rates, but I'd be lying to you. All right? So anyway, I think we've gone over a little, but, you know, I hope that we've helped you in some way. I know we covered a lot. We didn't have a long time, but, you know.
And we got a lot of good questions, Phil, in the question and answer that we've been answering. So I've also encouraged any of the listeners to please have any questions. And if any of you listeners to the podcast have any questions, please feel free to email us through the Eager site. We'd be glad to help.
And we will continue to do these webinars, right? How often are we going to do these?
We definitely try to get one in every month. We had been starting to do the first Tuesday of every month, but due to scheduling and other logistics, we've had to alter that. So we are going to continue to have at least one every single month, but we will be posting all of the dates for that on our Jaeger CPA Review Facebook page. So if you have any question as to when the next one is, we generally start promoting it about 2 weeks prior to the release, and we do have social media posts that go out. If you are on the Jaeger mailing list as well, and if you're not currently, you can go to JaegerCPAReview.com. We send out an email about a week and a half, 2 weeks before, and then again a week before we have the Facebook Lives to also promote it that way so you can register to the webinar.
Yeah, please email us if you have any questions. And Phil, I think you share with me, our goal is for all of you to pass this exam. Nothing is more satisfying to us, Phil, than
Absolutely.
Every candidate passing the exam, no matter how you do it, whose services you use. Hopefully you use ours. We'd love to help you. And the greatest thrill we get, Phil, is when we get an email from a candidate saying they passed the part and they're on to the next one.
Absolutely. So anyway, on behalf of Ron, Rob, who's the announcer, producer, and myself, Phil Jaeger, I want to thank you very much for participating, listening, and we will do another webinar. And please, just look at our website and you can find out about these. And also, please, every Tuesday, we have a new subject on our podcast. Okay. Anyway, thank you very much, everyone. Have a pleasant evening or a pleasant day wherever you are, and we'll see you on the next webinar. Thank you.
Once again, I'd like to thank you for being the best part of CPA Review and More with your host, Phil Jaeger. If you have any questions or topics you'd like to hear on the show, or if you'd like to be a guest on the show to share your story, we want to hear from you. Send me an email to the studio at podcast@JaegerCPAReview.com. If you're enjoying the content that we're providing, we'd greatly appreciate it if you'd submit a review to the Apple iTunes podcast app to let us know how we're doing. If you're in the market for a CPA review course or simply want to find out more about the CPA exam and what Jaeger has to offer, check out JaegerCPAReview.com or call our office and we'll answer any questions you may have. The link and the phone number will be in the description of this podcast. Here at Team Jaeger, we're excited to tell you about our new Jaeger CPA Review subscription format. It's the same great Jaeger CPA Review course that you know and love on an all-new month-to-month, no-commitment subscription format. Check it out today. Once again, my name's Rob Medford. I'm your executive producer and director here at the Jaeger Studios. And until next time, take care and be audit you can be.